Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue along with WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Newsman Ray Kraft. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning.
And Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick. A pleasure to have you back. Thank you, Judy.
Good morning.
And we are here to talk about many important issues and all kinds of cool things that are happening in the news and things that aren't cool but make you go, huh? Let us begin with, of course, the fallout, the after party of the shutdown.
The afterbirth.
of the shutdown. And so the president spoke yesterday and talked with reporters, and obviously the Senate voted Wednesday night on this deal. And so the question is, you know, still a little bit of winners and losers. And I believe the headline in the New York Times is Obama's edge over GOP is still unclear after victory in standoff. So as the smoke starts to clear, Alan, what do you think we're seeing?
Well, I have no doubt that Obama was the winner. I have no doubt that he looked into their eyes, that he was calm, that he wasn't mean, he wasn't vitriolic, and that he won. However, now he has to decide on what his strategy is going to be, and it seems to me that strategy has to be that he's conciliatory with them. If he rubs defeat into their faces, he becomes a loser because they won't do anything. He's got immigration reform that he has to work on, which, by the way, a lot of Republicans are for. He's got the farm bill, which everybody has to get on board for, and which is wildly popular with smaller farmers, which needs to get done also, and for some reason just can't get through. So Obama has to say, okay, on to the next stuff, and we can do this work. I just received a petition from somebody in Stone Ridge who writes to me and says, sends me a copy of his petition, which is that he will never vote for another Republican again as long as they behave the way that they have. There's going to be a certain residue of this very tough fight.
So, reading from the Times article, the president and his team hope that congressional Republicans stung by this week's defeat reevaluate their scorched earth strategy and seek agreement with the president on issues like immigration and long-term spending to demonstrate that they can govern, but they fear the opposition may instead double down and become even more determined to prevent the White House from getting the upper hand in future legislative battles. Which brings you up to that question of, you know, why can't you all just get along?
Yeah, why can't you all get along? But the Tea Party, probably that small group, I think they are fortified by this. They're going to be stronger in the future. I think you know, now they're back home. They're talking amongst themselves saying, we got to do it. We got to fight harder. The question is, how is the mainstream Republican Party going to deal with it next time around?
I'm sorry, Judy, go ahead.
You know, the other thing going forward is that, you know, I think the president has some political capital here. The damage done to the economy that people are talking about now, he's going to be able to point his finger at the Republicans over the next year or so and say, you know, this is your fault.
Right, as he pointed at George Bush for the last 5 years. Now he can go into the future pointing at Republicans. Amazing.
Yeah, well, Ray, I think that was sort of a cheap shot. It was the Republicans who set the whole thing up for the failure of the housing bubble and the
I think you can go further than George Bush for that. You can certainly go back to the Clinton administration for that if you want to start pointing that finger.
Well, then why don't we go back to George Washington while we're at it?
All right, why don't you do that?
I'm appalled. What else can I say?
Okay. appalled.
Are you appalled at, what are you appalled at, Alan?
Ray. Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
right
it's so clear.
Slim.
It's it's so just so clear that the Republicans were responsible for this. Judy, I wanted to come back to something you said a little bit ago, and that is that these guys are running for president. The Ted Cruz's and the Marco Rubio's are running for president. They know full well that the people who vote in the primaries are primarily to the right of center. So the more red meat they can give them, the more likely they are to continue the fight, which is kind of irresponsible when you're talking about governing a country.
And will they? How are their campaign contributions coming in for the Tea Party supporters? I think they're probably coming in pretty strong this week and next. But how are the contributions coming into mainstream Republicans? I think those are not coming in as strong.
Well, you know, even in this fight, Judy, very good point. Even in this fight, there was no question that even the moderate Republicans were afraid of primaries because of who comes out in the primaries and who turns out and who gives money. So, you know, you get money from the Koch brothers and others, the more right-wing you are, the more conservative you are, the more likely you are to get that money. That's the way it is.
The president, in his remarks yesterday, said, of course, there are no winners here, and said that you know, he was looking, as you alluded to earlier, Alan, of moving on, and we discussed this yesterday, of moving on to other fights, including immigration and the farm bill. I guess I'm curious as to, you know, how soon it takes these wounds to heal immediately so you can start getting back to something constructive, which the other thing that bothers me, and I've heard varying accounts of this, is that we have February, which does not seem all that far away.
No,
to me,
it does not.
Looming as, you know, we're going to do this all over again.
There's a fascinating article in the Times this morning that talked about whether or not Obama, the McConnell contribution to the language means that the debt ceiling can be raised by the president from now on. Everybody rushed to say no, that wasn't true, but the Times thought it was worth a full article to describe the idea that that Obama could, without their objecting, raise the ceiling.
Yeah, they have. This is actually the next issue we were going to talk about. It's it is, no, that it fits. It goes
foreshadowing.
Yeah, well, no, it's it fits. What's the next logical progression? Is what I was looking for.
Yeah.
So in their news analysis, they talk about lingering confusion in the debt ceiling deal's temporary fix, and they start off the article. Annie Lowry writes, "Did Congress just kill the debt ceiling?" It might look that way given the legislative text of the deal that Congress just approved and President Obama signed into law on Thursday morning, reopening the government and allowing the Treasury to get back to financing the government's debt. At first glance, the default prevention section of the bill seemed to imply that the president would have the authority in the future to increase the country's debt unilaterally and that Congress could stop him only by passing a bill forbidding it. Given that the president could veto that bill, it would take a supermajority of two-thirds of lawmakers in both the House and Senate to stop him from increasing the total amount of debt on the government's books. And, Alan, this is something that we talked about during the height of the fight, if you will, about what the president's power was in this regard, because there was some question by scholars that he had this power all along.
Well, if he were to do that, I think you would find that the shift would be from the Republican right to impeachment. I think, you know, I doubt very much that he would pull that rabbit out of the hat and say, I have this power without including the Congress. You know, some of these guys were quite vitriolic, and, you know, you had Sarah Palin and some of the others talking about impeaching the man, which I think goes to the heart of what was happening here. It was so mean-spirited that one has to really wonder what was really going on, you know. I mean, it's as if the election weren't over. They just can't. This group just can't take the fact that he won. To me, the political hero in this thing was John McCain. because, you know, McCain was basically saying, if you listen to his words, hey, I don't agree with it, but this fight is over. He won. He won. He kept saying that, which I think made him a statesman.
I just want to go back to impeachment, because on what grounds? Wait, what was done any, here that was illegal?
Any ground you want. You know, they say he grabbed power he wasn't entitled to. I'm in complete agreement with you that there isn't substance to it, but that they were able to do, they're able to say it again and again and again, impeach him, or the same way they did with the birther incident. He's Kenyan, he's Muslim, he's this, he's that. They just say it. It goes into the PR machine, and they grind it into the ground.
You know, one of the interesting things about this New York Times article about the confusion about what they agreed to was the fact that truly the next day people aren't sure what they've agreed to so far, that you have a banker telling his clients that, you know, this has been fixed from here on out.
Right.
So how does that happen?
Future debt limit increases automatically, will that specter will no longer be there. But as I see it, this ends February 7th. In other words, Congress would have to make it permanent, so not an issue until the next crisis.
So was it intentionally unclear, or is this just a matter of Congress not communicating well what they've done?
Well, I think McConnell may have been worried about what was coming up next. I mean, there's a branch of the party that has really been driving this thing. McConnell was the conciliator here. And if it wasn't for McConnell, you know, this thing would have never been passed in the Senate, never gone on to the House. Boehner would not have been able to, you know, to grab onto it and say, okay, we can have an up and down vote. So it may be that McConnell said, okay, the future of the Republican Party here is so tied in to the way we appear now that maybe we ought to avoid at least one more, fight. Now, the Republicans will feel, hey, someday we're going to elect a president, you know, and maybe a moderate Republican. And will this serve us well if we do this? Quite frequently, when you have these supermajority arrangements, they're looking over at their next chance.
Yeah. If they get another chance.
We want to take a break. Quick clarification on the, you know, Alan was just talking about calls for impeachment. The latest comes from the lieutenant governor in Texas.
Yes.
David Dewhurst, who, interestingly enough, lost a Senate primary to Ted Cruz in 2012 and said, quote, "This election is about protecting you and your freedoms, which are given to you by God, but which are being trampled on by Barack Obama right now. I don't know about you, but Barack Obama ought to be impeached, not only for trampling on our liberties, but what he did in Benghazi is just a crime."
I saw this, and it's a fairly nebulous, there's not really too much specific substance to this. I think there is no chance for him to do this. And he says, he goes, I said this as a private citizen. Oh, really? You're lieutenant governor of Texas. Yeah. Oh, you're a private citizen now. Well
he said it at a Tea Party event, you know, for what it was worth. Let us take a break. We'll be back and talk about this and other issues. We would love to hear your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from BayPath College Graduate School. Offering an online master's degree in cybersecurity, baypath.edu for details. The Bardavan presenting the Hudson Valley Philharmonic October 26th, Merle Haggard November 3rd, Hungarian State Folk Ensemble November 8th, and Vince Gill November 15th, bardavan.org. The Francis Lehman Loeb Art Center at Vassar College, Poughkeepsie, presenting Gen G's World in Japanese Woodblock Prints through December 15th, fllac.vassar.edu. And the Research Foundation for SUNY on Facebook, facebook.com/rfsuny.
Turn my car,
Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel. Judy Patrick is here from the Daily Gazette. Ray Graff, of course, and Alan Shartok joins us, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So now congressional negotiators on Thursday are plunging into the difficult budget talks to avoid a repeat crisis within months and quickly agreed to lower their sights from the sort of grand bargain that has eluded the two parties for 3 years. After approval late Wednesday of the agreement ending the standoff, the deal-making mantle shifted overnight from the leaders of the Senate to the Budget Committee leaders. Senator Patty Murray, a Democrat of Washington, and Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, two less senior lawmakers who nonetheless could make very effective salespeople since they command loyal followings in their party. And the political pressure lifted as well, at least for now. And all sides agree that there is a need for bipartisan breakthrough, even a modest one, amplified by the economic costs wrought by the 16-day shutdown and the near default on government obligations. So with all of that said, you can have this moment of a little bit of hope, maybe, but we wonder how long it will last.
Well, the way that I see this is that if we continue to do this, the Republicans are in big trouble, and the Democrats won't like it either. If they leave it alone right now, they have an even chance, I hate to say this in this country, of everybody forgetting what just happened at the next election. But if they don't, it's going to be very fresh in everybody's mind.
Yeah, especially if it's happening in February. But, I mean, and again, the thing I question is how long can you kick this down the road? We keep on going for these extensions and going to February, going to this, going to that. You know, at what point do we actually have to belly up to the bar, as it were, and pay the tab?
You know, when you talk to real people, I think what you hear them say often is, what did they really accomplish this week? Did they accomplish anything? We're going to go back at this in a few months. Nothing really has been accomplished if we're just going to go through this all over again.
And was it, if it was about an issue over Obamacare, and if that was the sole issue, you know, will that or how will that re-enter the equation?
Oh, it can't. I mean, if the Republican strategists say we're going to try this again, then somebody needs to be fired. That was a very petulant, childlike thing to do, is attack an already approved law and say, well, we're going to hold the government up because of that. If it's because of fiscal restraint or lowering taxes or cutting spending, then they have an ideological leg to stand on. But just saying, we don't like this, we got to stop it now, they won't do it again. They won't do that angle again. They can't.
And the idea that they're going to go at it in 2 years from now is ridiculous, too, because by then the program's going to be well established.
Maybe. And I think from the Republican standpoint, what they do is they sit back and they say, well, we're going to find out now. They own it. If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, we have our angle for the next round of elections. But now they just have to wait. They can't keep fighting it. It's a law.
You know, I think there were hints of that, Ray. Very good point. But I think there were hints of that at the end, last time, of this mess, they were saying, okay, all right, forget about Obamacare. We'll do something else. We'll shift the focus to wanting something else. Quote, one guy said, we're going to get something out of this. We have to get something out of this. And it would look to me like, okay, the Obamacare thing is not working out. We have to find another thing.
And McCain pretty much said it. I mean, at the end game, is this was not a good plan.
We're going to take a break and get some NPR news. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome you in that conversation as well. All kinds of ways to do it. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can go to our webpage. You can go to our Facebook page. You can tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll return after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Ray Graff, Alan Shartok, and the Daily Gazette's Judy Patrick. And let us talk about a really big story that is breaking in the Capital Region and is a political scandal, the dust Doesn't take long before we get another one. So here we are. A supervisor accused of stealing campaign cash in a very...
From herself.
Well, yeah. Right. But yes. And we see a public official in handcuffs being led away. So... what do we make of this case?
So interesting. Yesterday, in Tuesday, Half Moon Supervisor Mindy Wormuth, Half Moon is up in southern Saratoga County. She was in federal court and then in state court. First in federal court, she was charged with two counts of accused of accepting $7,000 in cash from promoters so that she would use her influence to advocate for the legalization of mixed martial arts competitions in New York, which still is an issue in New York State. So that's the federal charge. And then they brought her up in handcuffs to Town of Waterford Court, where she faced some state charges. And those were felony counts of grand larceny and filing a false instrument for misusing about $6,000 in campaign contributions. What she did allegedly was take checks made out to her campaign and cashed them and spent them. That, if true, is illegal, and she faces some really significant jail time if convicted on these. The federal case would be 20 years and $250,000 in fines if she did this. She'd been under some suspicion for a while. She had taken a leave of absence from her job as the town supervisor. The town board up there had called for her resignation. Interesting day. We always, one of the big questions here is what kind of influence does a town of, Saratoga town supervisor have over state legislation?
Yeah, on the mixed martial arts. That was my question. What could she do?
So one of the things, what she did do was write a letter on town stationery to Assemblyman Jim Todisco and Senator Kathy Marchione in favor of it. But again, what clout does she carry? The other
does
thing,
that cost $7,000?
Is it worth $7,000?
Yeah, that's a hell of a letter, isn't it?
And the other thing, that there was some talk that she was going to submit a resolution in support of mixed martial arts to the Saratoga County Board of Supervisors, which might have had a little bit of clout when these county boards do these resolutions in favor of one thing or another. But again, it's really an odd allegation, or it's an odd way to influence government. But still, interestingly, one of the things was that whether or not she did this on town stationery. So that was the big thing, that she did it in her official capacity. But I wonder if she had done it on her own time as a consultant, would that have been legal?
Ah.
Oh, it's a good
question. And also, had she quit when they wanted her to quit, would these charges have been brought? Sometimes when these people step aside, that takes the heat off, and the prosecutors sort of don't pursue it. I was thinking about what you said before, Ray, when you said stealing from herself. But, a lot of these people who do these things, whether it's a college president, we have this interesting case in Westfield, in which the president is accused of having spent too much on his own trips and things like that. Often these people there are rules put in place so that people who run companies will not be excessive, will not use, or who are politicians will not use campaign funds for themselves. So I think the interpretation would be not stealing from themselves, but stealing from the people who gave them the money for specific reasons.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And you look back, she seems, this is her third term, and it seems that there have been a lot of troubles along the way. You report in your story that she was forced to return $4,000 to a developer after his contributions exceeded the state's campaign finance limit. Last year, she stepped down from the county's Public Works Committee amid controversy over a land deal in which she sold two properties from well above the assessed value to a local developer. I don't know how much of that is if you looked into anyone's background, that you would see these little things, and we're seeing this because of the major charges, or if this was just trouble brewing for a long time.
One of the reasons she said that she decided to cash the campaign contributions was she was annoyed that the powers that be had endorsed someone else other than her for re-election back in the spring. So said, okay, I'm going to take some money, allegedly.
I must say, I think that the federal case is more interesting, because why would those wanting mixed martial arts think it was a good value to throw $7,000 at a town supervisor to exert influence. I'd love to know the backstory. There has to be a reason.
Right, of all the supervisors in New York State, which there are hundreds of them, and why pick Southern Saratoga County? Why this? You know, one of the payments allegedly was made when they had that big mixed martial arts demonstration down in the Capitol or down in Albany, in the spring.
Yeah.
And so the timing was the same.
Well, and from my understanding, it was so that she would introduce legislation to the full Board of Supervisors, so that it would get the backing of the full board. So that to say that Saratoga County wanted to bring this into the county, and it was something that would be beneficial to the county as a whole.
Okay.
Well, there are some other, Joe, very quickly, there are some other reasons that people do these things. You remember when Joe Bruno gave the guy the money for the horse, the worthless horse? And he said, how come he did that? Well, he did me some other favors. So you really don't know, but I'm always interested in the concept of character here. People who do the same things over and over again, even though, you know, they've been warned, and they still do that. You'll remember that Alan Hevesy, when he had his wife being driven around, and his assistant was quoted in the Times as saying, because he had done the same thing in New York City. When he was controller there, and said, "Oh, Alan, we're not going to do that again, are we?" But he did. And that's always fascinating.
Why do you think they do that? Do you think they're untouchable? They think that the laws don't or the rules don't apply to them?
Well, I have a feeling, Judy, that it's character. I think it goes to character. I think some people feel, you know, it's a mixture of arrogance, it's a mixture of entitlement, you know, that kind of thing. But in the end, they do it. And they do it over and over again, despite the fact that that they've been burned in the past. To me, that's the most unfathomable thing about all of this.
You know, I should mention that Mindy Wormuth pleaded not guilty to all of these charges yesterday, and these cases are all pending.
Sure.
And we'll see how they.
And she may well get. She may well get off.
So we're not saying she's guilty. That's the point. From a legal standpoint, we are not saying.
That's a very good point, Ray.
Yeah.
Yep.
With that, let's take a break.
Yeah, and we'll run it by legal, and then we'll come back. Maybe she is. I mean, we'll find out.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Harney & Sons Fine Teas, specializing in tea for over 30 years, offering 200 different varieties of tea, accessories, and more in Millerton, Soho, and online. Harney.com. First Care Walk-In Medical Center, Route 299, Highland, New York. Occupational medical care for workplace injuries 7 days a week, DOT and other physical examinations, drug testing, and more. FirstCareMedCenter.com. Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock, a specialty health food store since 1978, celebrating October Non-GMO Month with signs throughout the store. SunflowerNatural.com for monthly flyer. And The Chazen Companies, solving site design, planning, regulatory compliance, and source water challenges for municipalities, campuses, and businesses. ChazenCompanies.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable Panel. I'm Joe Donahue. Ray Graff is here, making me laugh. And Judy Patrick is here as well, and Alan Chartok, and we welcome your comments as well. So, we were talking about Texas before, and during the break, I said, you know, between Texas and Florida, it's just, they're never... There's never a lack of just good stories coming out of these states.
There's always a good story in every state. New York has plenty of wonderful
stories,
too.
Well, certainly New York is up there. But, Florida. So, two people were forged documents used in a prison break from a Florida prison. Investigators, convicted killers released by mistake.
Yeah. But and the escapees forged their own documents?
Yeah.
It's like Hogan's Heroes.
Investigators offered a statewide review of Florida's prison records to determine whether anyone has filed forged documents like the ones used in an elaborate escape. Charles Walker and Joseph Jenkins, 34 years old, are considered escapees by authorities after investigators discovered forged motions to reduce their respective sentences and forged court orders granting the request. Now, the big question here is how, like, that got to the powers that be. They were like, oh, all right, yeah, all right.
Johnny's going to miss school today. Yeah, all right, fine.
Let those people out. Gee, I thought they were going to be here for 30 years. Apparently tomorrow they're getting out. Both motions bore that the forged signatures of the Orlando area state attorney or the assistant state attorney, according to a statement released on behalf of the Ninth Circuit state attorney. The judge's order granting the release of Jenkins and Walker bore the forged signature of Judge Belvin Perry, who gained national attention while presiding over the Casey Anthony trial. It's a very interesting, case of how could that, happen? And Jenkins went free on September 27th. Walker was released on October 8th. And this is the one that I love. It is unclear whether the two men, both former residents of Orlando, knew each other. And the Orange County Sheriff's Office worries that at least one of them may have returned to the area. Jenkins was convicted in the slaying of a man some 15 years ago. And, you just wonder, well, how does something like that happen?
Right. Wouldn't you think that the courts would, like, have a list that they would give to the clerks or forward to the prisons? And you got to wonder, like, maybe there's hundreds of people out there like this. It was an ingenious way to get out of prison.
Well, and to be clear, Jenkins is a murderer. I mean,
yes.
He gunned somebody down, and is he walking
around now?
Well, I think
they're both convicted killers,
yeah.
Correct? Yeah. So that is my understanding, that they are labeled as escapees. They are out. They got out, and they didn't really have to escape because they opened the door and said, "Here you go."
It's amazing.
Well, just to be clear, it was an escape. You said they didn't have to escape. They didn't have to tunnel.
Well, they didn't have to
tunnel.
But
they were still doing it under. Yes.
Well, right, but meaning, you know, the escape is a lot easier when.
When you walk out the front door.
When you walk out the front door and they give you your belongings and say, hey, you want to ride into town?
Here's your suit. Go.
Yeah. Right.
Well.
By the way, this has been done in the past in other places. And that is why it is so extraordinary to me that there aren't, bureaucratic fences in place to stop it from happening another time. You see it happen in another place, and you say, oh, well, we've got to make sure that that never happens. When something comes across the warden's desk, it has to be checked out four ways against the middle. And yet it happens. And that raises the specter, of course, in every case of who knew what when.
Right. And apparently this was found, from my understanding of the press on this, is that it actually came through an investigation of another case when they discovered that these forgeries took place again, going back to last month. So these people at least one of them has been on the run for, a long time.
They haven't gotten them back?
Oh, no, they're both still on the loose.
That's not
on the lam.
On the lam, that's right. And they are calling for themselves. They are calling for them to turn themselves in.
Right.
You can understand something falling through the cracks when you're dealing with a water meter bill or something like that. But when you're dealing with a convicted sure. killer, yeah. you really got to make sure that they're in there as long as they should be.
You know, it I find this stuff to be fascinating in the sense that, you know, sure. like if we try to move $20 from one account to the other, we have to answer, you know, who was our mother or what was our mother's maiden name?
Yeah.
And we have to do all this other stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you get a document from a state attorney. Like, wouldn't you think that would be checked in some way? Like, you'd call up the office and say, hey, just checking in on this. I mean, you can't.
Yes, and that is that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's what I was trying to say, Joe. I mean, the fact that it wasn't done raises eyebrows. I mean, it could have been not done because people were stupid, or it could have not been done because somebody had a stake in all of this. And if I were those guys right now, I'd be practicing my Portuguese very well.
You know, it's the court system is such a paper.
Get it?
Heading out of the country.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But on the other hand, think of how long it took to get Whitey Bulger number one on the list. With our usual efficiency, maybe we'll never get these guys.
You know, the court system is really it deals with a lot of paper. They're going to more electronic records, but maybe when increasing use of electronic records would make this not happen, because I think this was a piece of paper was handed to the clerk.
Well,
Let's move on to another story, and you have a seasonal story for us, Judy.
We do. Happy Halloween. What's out in terms of Halloween costumes this year? We had heard that Miley Cyrus was big, and so we sent the reporter out, find us Miley Cyrus costumes, but apparently not around here. So Miley Cyrus is not big, but Duck Dynasty is big. The traditional zombies are big.
Yeah.
Cinderella, always big with the kids. But you always get the topical things, Breaking Bad. Haven't heard of any politicians yet.
No.
That might make a good Halloween costume. They don't lend Ted Cruz looks like he might make a good good Halloween face. He might show up at a
not enough,
near you.
Not well known enough. But what about there was George Bush was popular for a couple of years.
Richard Nixon always popular.
Yeah, Alan's going to break out his Nixon mask once again for the 35th year in a row.
Nixon.
But there, you know,
how about Ray Graff?
Hey, what about him? I'll tell you, we had our Halloween tryouts last night. All the kids tried on their costumes. Frightening.
You know,
absolutely frightening.
The average person will spend $75 on a Halloween costume. And Halloween is becoming
bigger and bigger.
Mostly adults will spend the $75 on the costume. But
The question to me is always the ominous trick or treat. What's the trick? Now, when we first moved to Great Barrington, there was a problem. I don't want to go into it because I don't want it to happen again.
All right.
But somebody can ruin a paint job real easily if there's... But we don't hear of that much anymore, at least around here.
Well, you do. I think egging and whatnot.
Go ahead.
You'll see it. You have to be vigilant, I think.
So that's why it's good to have television cameras.
It's sort of like a little extortion by young children demanding candy in terms of that.
What a sweet tradition.
Or by older children.
Yeah, I don't think there's any extortion involved. I think they'll get the candy and then they'll do it anyway. I mean, I don't think there's an or there.
But this is a big, a really big holiday, and people, business, lots of money being spent, lots of adult parties.
You know, I still have to say, I don't mean this as an offense to anyone, but I'm a little wary when adults get dressed up.
I agree.
I'm just a little wary. I like it.
Right.
It's cool, but.
You mean you don't get dressed up here at the office on Halloween day?
Been known to happen.
Any number of hilarious jokes can be. We'll just leave it alone, Judy.
All right.
I just want you to know, in New Orleans, where we just came back from, they're already preparing for Halloween, which is huge.
Yeah.
There, it's almost a national holiday.
Yeah. Well,
it's another excuse to go topless.
Right. Back to the Miley Cyrus thing.
Right.
All right. And our final story this morning, sleep cleans the brain of toxins.
Oh, good.
Yep.
The brain uses sleep to wash away the waste toxins built up during a hard day's thinking, according to researchers. The U.S. team believed that the waste removal system is one of the fundamental reasons for sleep. Their study in the journal Science showed brain cells shrink during sleep to open up the gaps between neurons and allow fluid to wash the brain clean. Hmm. They also suggest that failing to clear away some toxic proteins may play a role in brain disorders.
Well, there you go.
One big question for sleep researchers is, why do animals sleep at all when it leaves them vulnerable to predators?
What do you mean, Ray? There you go.
What do you mean? What, you think it's a shot at you, just because you get 2 hours sleep
a
night? I'm not taking a shot at you.
I see.
Although
I only get two hours sleep a night,
so I don't know.
But it's all true, and don't think it doesn't scare the hell out of me. It does.
No.
And you say exactly the right thing. that it is very, very scary for those of us who don't sleep well. It explains everything.
It does not. Come on, you got rid of your toxins. You're good.
It's kind of an odd image, the brain kind of draining itself like a sinus of all these bad things that it's produced over the day. But I'm glad it does it.
Does thinking cause these bad things? You just don't think. I mean, that's another way
around it. Well, it's in Science. It's in Science magazine. It must be true.
The journal Science. And also in the journal Nature Neuroscience, they revealed an intimate relationship between an aging brain, sleep, and memory. Experiments show that changes in the aging brain damaged the quality of deep sleep. This, in turn, hampered the ability to store memories.
Well, there you go.
Ooh. Which is interesting as well.
Yeah, my case too.
Scientists want to test ways of boosting sleep to halt memory decline. Wisdom may come with age, but both the brain and the body take the strain of time. Many people will be aware that both their memory and sleep are not as good as in their earlier years.
But, you know, this doesn't, does it take into account the quality of the sleep? In other words, if you catch a cat nap for 40 minutes and then you're up and then you sleep for 2 hours, will that have the same detoxifying effect?
They're using the term a deep sleep. So,
do you need 40 minutes to hit deep?
I don't know that enough. I don't know that.
Judy, you want to weigh in?
I do not know if 40 minutes is enough to go deep, but I'm not going to speculate.
Yesterday when I took my nap here at the office, I felt like I...
Well, that's usually about 2 hours. I think you're in deep REM.
I feel like I'd taken a deep sleep, absolutely. We are out of time. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thanks for writing in and being a part of the program as well. You can still do so at roundtable@wamc.org or on our Facebook page or Twitter or our website. Ray Graff, Judy Patrick, and Alan Chartok. Thank you very much.
Is there more of the show?
Thank you.
There you go. Thanks, Judy.
You're welcome.
Take care. Look forward to having you back soon. We'll continue with the roundtable after this short break.